say I'm crazy. I really don't care. That's my prerogative.
I'm here. Thank you for your patience. Yes, I made it.
Yeah, dude. It's good seeing you, man.
You as well, man. Thanks, man. Hey, my headphones make me look like I got a blue ribbon mullet. I love this. It's sandwiched it out, so I got the bi-level. Yes.
My headphones barely fit because I got, like, you know, corn head from corn. You know, they call them head. You know, I could be related to them, you know?
It's a high intellect. There's a lot. There's a lot of story. Yeah.
Well, you're fresh off the boat, off the cruise. How did that go?
It was amazing. You know, it was the fifth one. And, you know, I think the first time that Jericho said, hey, I want to do a cruise, there's, you know, it's the entertainer cruise is the way of the future for, you know, festivals. And, you know, obviously, it's basically a Comic-Con on the water. It's really cool. It's like everyone who loves wrestling and rock and roll is on it, and the boat's been sold out. And I mean, the only way that I can kind of say it is the same way when we go to Europe and do these festivals that are kind of destination festivals. Everybody there is so excited. They've, you know, planned for this thing for a year. Everybody's excited, and it has an energy that's different from a regular club show or anything else. It's very unique. So we've had fantastic shows, and Fozzie played three shows. Guardians played three shows. PJ Farley, our bass player in Fozzie, he's in a band. Also, his band Trickster, they played two shows, and then he also played in Jericho's Kiss tribute band Quarantine. So all of us are, you know, we're having fun and having a great vacation, but we're also working our asses off and multiple sets. And you've known me long enough to know that I don't phone in the gigs. I work really hard, and so I probably burnt 10,000 calories a day just doing it up. Hey, I see you got a remix bump box. I've got one of those as well. I love those. You do? Yeah, of course.
Oh, sweet. So you got one too. I got a Snoop Dogg one and this one. So now I have a collection.
Yeah, I'm a big bump box fan. When we did the Sane video, which was on the roller coaster, for those who don't know about it, Fozzie did a music video on a moving roller coaster. And we were trying to figure out how to get a loud playback unit on the roller coaster. So I bought one of the... It's the remix is kind of a smaller, medium size bump box, but I got the Flair 8, which is the big one. And we got a professional rigger that mounted the bump box Flair 8 to the inside of that was our playback unit. And I had my phone tucked in my sock and push play as we're going up and we did the music video using a bump box. It was fantastic. Yeah, I still have it. Yeah, it's my my dressing room. Get ready for the show jams. It's cool.
Is it blasting while you're on that roller coaster? I mean, is it like, do you have it just really, really super loud while you're going down this roller coaster?
It was all the way up.
It's almost too cool. Still, it's just blaring at you. Yeah.
Well, we're going 70 miles per hour. And remember, it's not just me and Jericho that has to hear it. It's the guys who are three cars behind us in the band who have to hear it as well. I mean, it's most important for Chris because obviously he's the one who's got to do the lip sync, the lyrics in the music video. The rest of us were just headbanging and trying not to vomit on the sixth time in a row.
Yeah, and you're talking about videos. Our boy Trevor just filmed a video for you guys. That's coming out soon, right? I don't even know what song it is or anything, but I know Trevor's worked on Good Company.
Yeah, I met Trevor because he's part of the Nathan Mowry collective of genius, freaking just cool artists. Filmmakers, and I know them through you as well. And Trevor did a photo shoot for the Guardians about 3 years ago. And the reason I wanted Trevor to do the Guardians' new music video is because he's an 80s fanatic. His favorite thing is 80s aesthetic. He loves the colors. He loves everything about the 80s. It's the nostalgia and the music, the look, films, TV. I knew he was the right guy to do it because it's, you know, when you're shooting a music video, it's not just, is it lit well? You know, do you have a good camera and do we have a good concept? The idea is somebody inspired by the idea and it has a passion to want to do this? Because as you and I have been in this business for a very long time, you need to surround yourself with people who understand your vision and who want to be in your cult. You want them drinking Kool-Aid with you and believing in the same mission statement. So the crazy thing about the Guardians when I started this band 3 years ago was that I just made the assumption that you do a tribute band the same way you would do every other band I've ever been in, Stuck Mojo and Fozzy, and you record some demo songs, you record, you film some videos. But what I found out is a lot of the talent buyers all over the country and in Europe, they want what's called sizzle reels. So they basically want highlight reels. They want a combination of six or seven songs into one, you know, 2 minute, basically a highlight reel. I guess it would be the same thing if you were a wrestler. You would say, hey, instead of sending me a video of one of your matches, you would send them a highlight reel of like 10 matches. Here's this and this and this. And it made sense. It's just I wasn't prepared. It's this Guardians of the Jukebox adventure has been an education for me as well. I mean, part of it is I'm making music with my best friends, just like I do with Fozzy, just like I did in Stuck Mojo. We're a gang. The second thing is trying to understand the environment. When Stuck Mojo started, we were two black guys and two white guys playing hip hop metal in a world coming out of the late 80s where the most popular bands were, you know, Warrant and, you know, Skid Row. And like, we were trying to navigate a landscape that was new. And thank God for the Chili Peppers. Thank God for Faith No More, that there was some bands kind of doing things that were related to us, although they were cousins. We were able to kind of navigate that. And then with Fozzy, we started off doing basically what Steel Panther is doing now, which is that we are wearing costumes and wigs and playing cover material and trying to figure out what does members of Stuck Mojo and a professional wrestler, Chris Jericho, do to find their way and navigate, you know, making records and touring. And so luckily for me, although I haven't climbed Everest, I've climbed other mountains, metaphorically, mm-hmm. You know, I know the process of, and I know that everything is an opportunity for learning and growth, but I have the basic tools that I need to make Guardians a huge band in the same way that Stuck Mojo and Fozzy was a grind, but we got there. Nobody thought that me and Chris Jericho from the WWE would ever have a gold album on our wall. And they were probably right. We probably shouldn't have. But yeah, the reason that it worked was because Chris and I are both not the kind of guys that sit at base camp two boiling water with the Sherpas. We're going north. We're headed for the summit. Even if it means we lose a foot on the way to frostbite, we are going to the summit. That's how we're built. That's how we're wired. And my feelings towards the Guardians are the same. I don't ever do anything. I played in a couple of other bands. I've done gigs with other groups along the way. But unless it's something that I feel like I can go to Everest, the summit with, I just really don't have any interest in it. I always tell people that I will never put the pads on and put a helmet on unless my goal is to go to the Super Bowl. Like, yeah. I just don't even want to be second best at anything. It's like and I don't even mean it success wise as in what kind of car is in my driveway or how many albums have I sold. Success to me is relative to what my goals are for me and my gang. You know, are we making music we love? Are we having great shows? Are we getting the best out of ourselves as a group? And so working with Trevor seemed like the right next step for us to put together this highlight reel. We filmed at a roller skating rink. Because there's nothing more 80s than going to the roller skating rink. it's just synonymous with that culture. And we invited a club of in Gwinnett County that is roller skating enthusiast and had them skating while we were performing. So we filmed us doing 9 songs, and then we also did a music video for What a Feeling, the Flashdance theme song, great. Which Irene Cara. Because we've already done music videos for My Prerogative, Electric Avenue, and Caribbean Queen. And since we did those videos, we were really fortunate to find that elusive, white unicorn. We've been looking for this female keyboard player who could really round us out as a band, because myself and Grant Brooks, who's the drummer in Fozzy, he and I are heavy metal kids from birth. And our male singer and our bass player came up in the Atlanta music scene in a band called Salem Ash, and they were big prog guys. So they came up Queensryche, Dream Theater, Dixie Dregs. So we have a bunch of goofy musicians that are all dudes wanting to play rock, and we needed a real female artist. We didn't need Ann Wilson from Heart. We didn't need Pat Benatar. We needed Annie Lennox from the Eurythmics. We needed a nice counterbalance. We needed someone who was sophisticated and that had that side of the 80s that was more of that what Annie Lennox meant to the 80s, which was great because it's a great counterbalance to the gold. Like I said, she's like a sophisticated pure breed, and we're a bunch of mutts over there jumping around. and the band is, it's the perfect. It really is a perfect band, and it really for us is continuing to figure this out like you would any band. That's the beautiful thing about me doing this twice already, is that I know what that process is. You rehearse, you're writing, you're recording, you're figuring each other out, because it's all chemistry and how do I complement this person, and how do they complement me, and my weaknesses need to be overcome by the strengths of my other bandmates. And every great band there ever was, that's how it worked. Whether it was Led Zeppelin or it was The Who or it was Snoop Dogg and his posse. Surround yourself with people that make you better by filling in the gaps and the holes that you maybe need improving on.
Yeah, that's a big thing, surrounding yourself with good people. And it sounds like you have a great group of people. How did you find your keyboardist, Cara? Am I saying her name right? Cara?
Yeah, Cara. Yeah.
Keep going.
No, so I just did this thing where I reached out to a bunch of people I know in the Atlanta area. One of them was Scully from Scully Entertainment. Oh, yeah. He knows he knows everybody. Yeah, of course. He's been a longtime friend, and he came up in bands, and he's a promoter. I asked him. He gave me some names. Then there was that thing where you use social media. You're asking people who are the people around town. It was kind of important to find someone in Atlanta, because otherwise you're asking someone to relocate, and that complicates things. And I was just lucky that after 3 or 4 conversations with different people, our manager, so we're managed by 2 people. One of them is Mark Willis, who manages Fozzy, and managed Stuck Mojo before that. And the other gentleman's name is Randy Sod, who you may know. Randy Sod, he worked for Ichiban Records in the 90s, and then he went on to manage a bunch of bands. And he also is a radio marketing guy. He actually got a part of Fozzy's radio marketing team. So he's been part of our family for a long time. And Randy knew of her because he saw her at a local Atlanta showcase at Smith Soul Bar. And he said, I got your girl. I got her. And, I had to convince her that I wasn't a lunatic because I had grand plans. And everybody comes to you, right? Like, I'm sure you've heard it a million times. You know what we're going to do? Let me tell you what I'm going to do. Everybody thinks like they're going to be big or this is going to happen. And I told her, I was like, when I first met her, I was like, the reason I know that Guardians of the Jukebox are going to be successful bands, because I've done it twice under impossible odds. Like, it was never supposed to be. Stuck Mojo was before Seven Dust. Thank God for them. They blew the doors down to allow multiracial rock bands to kind of be on the radio. We were traveling in really uncharted areas. And a lot of times it just takes people kicking doors down before it normalizes what that looks like, you know? And it doesn't mean it's good or bad or whatever. It's I didn't even have any judgment on whether people should have accepted us or not. There's just like the same way that if, you know, a bunch of guys from the Philippines came in and they were in a reggae band, it doesn't look what people think it should look like, right? You know, people have a stereotype of what things are supposed to look like and sound like, and you just have to prove them wrong. And so for me, I just love overcoming those odds. So I told people from day one with the Guardians, if we're not playing Chastain Park, then I've failed. Like if we're not headlining amphitheaters, I'm not interested in the reason that we play clubs now is what I call beta testing. I want to play every club that'll have us say, thank you so much. I want to figure out how this works. Get this band good. Stuck Mojo did it. We spent years at the Rec Room, the Somber Reptile. Yeah, we played any place that would have us. Yes, right. We never said no. We never cared about the money. We never cared about anything. All we wanted to do was make those four dudes on the stage the most powerful force in our business. And that's all I want to do with the Guardians is find out what songs work for us, find out how we work better together as a live band. And we do a big multimedia package with video and how that works.
Yeah. That's the best video background. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
For someone that's never seen you guys play live, how would you describe your style, the kind of songs you guys play? For someone that's never heard of you or never seen you, like what can they expect if they see you play?
Well, we're just the best cover band anyone's ever seen. Right. And part of that just kind of comes down to, I always try to explain it to people that, it's not necessarily that we're talent. You know this, you talk to people in the business all the time and you're in the business. Talent really doesn't mean a lot. So if I say we're the best cover tribute band, it's not me doing this because it doesn't mean whether somebody can play like Eddie Van Halen or someone can sing like Lionel Richie or someone can sing like Madonna or play drums like the drummer from Toto. None of that matters. What matters is when people come to see you play, they feel like they've seen something special. They feel like they've built a relationship with what they're seeing. So there's tons of people who are talented who will go down and on a Saturday night play the Dixie Tavern and blow the doors off the place, but they just played those songs good. And being good is just such a small part of this. And we know that because there's so many rap artists and pop artists and rock and roll and heavy metal artists that weren't the best. They weren't the best guitar player or best singer. It really just came down to people who understand how to build relationships with audiences. And it's also people that are willing to do whatever it takes to put on the most incredible show possible. And, you know, I always know going into any endeavor that in this business, that if you're not willing to take every item that you own and every dollar from your bank account and set it in the middle of the floor and set it on fire, I mean, that's the gamble for any musician or any artist or filmmaker, anything. You want to do this? It is an all or nothing proposition. And most people, and this is no disrespect to most tribute bands or no disrespect to other, but they're not willing to do. It's the same reason I always say, people are like, man, God, man, you know, you're 55 years old, man. You're still making music. I was like, yeah, because it's freaking hard. It's hard to continue to make music. Because it's not hard to play guitar. It's not hard to do gigs. It's when COVID happens and there's no working for 2 years. And then you have to figure out what are you going to do. And when the 2008 crisis hit and the entire music business contracted and everything kind of slowed down, what are you going to do? And then when 9/11 happened and the whole business froze for 6 or 8 months. And when two record companies folded on me and all the money they owed, they kept. They just filed bankruptcy on us. Then people just say, I've had enough. I'm just going to get out of this. And not to mention the first part of it, which is that, do you want to ride around for 4 years in a 1977 Dodge van for no money and sleep on people's floors after the show that'll let you and basically live like a, you know, I'm not even going to say being homeless is bad. It's for a lot of people, it's no choice of theirs. It's terrible circumstances that have put them in this. Most musicians have to choose to be homeless. If you don't have rich parents that are bankrolling you, or you don't have the fortunate, just whatever luck to, on your fifth show you played and you got a record deal. Most people just spend years. I've known Morgan Rose my entire life. Like, we both, we lived like animals, like no money and no, but you never even thought about it. Why? Because this is what we're meant to do. This is my purpose.
Yes.
I don't want to do this for the fame or the money. I'm supposed to play guitar, whatever it takes. Circle back around. I'm not hanging around at Basecamp 2 with the Sherpas boiling water and talking about, it's bad weather up above. The people who make it in this business are the ones that just say, we're just going to the top. And if the Sherpas want to hang out in the tent while you head to the top, if we don't make it, you know, give me the little prayer when you walk by my frozen body on the side of the road, on the side of the path, when you go up to the top. That's the gamble that all musicians take. And in the tribute band business, it's populated by mainly people who tried doing original music when they were young, got hard, didn't, in their mind, make it, whatever that is. And they decided to put together a Motley Crue tribute band or something like that. And then they could play on the weekends, have fun. And there's nothing wrong with that. Dude, there's so many cool tribute cover bands that kick ass. And those guys and girls work Monday through Friday and they do it like it's their golf game. I love to play golf. So I work my ass off Monday through Friday so I can have a golf membership on Saturday. Same thing like a tribute bands. My tribute band's different. My tribute band is populated by people who have been in the game, who have done it, and who love this thing. And it's a, you know, we could have started another, original band. Or I could have just gone and got it on my knees and tried to tell the guys in Stuck Mojo, we should do this again for the 20th time. We should try it. But something magic happened to me. Artemis Pyle, who is the former drummer from Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah. Randy Sod, who is the Guardians manager, 4 years ago, put together a tribute show and asked me if I would play guitar and help organize the band to raise money for Bob. So in Lynyrd Skynyrd, Artemis Pyle played on Freebird. And Bob played on Sweet Home Alabama. There were two different kind of eras for drumming. Now, Artemis is the famous guy because he's crazy. He was like the personality. And so we were raising money. Bob had passed away and we were going to raise some money for his family. So the idea was to play a bunch of covers, Eagles, Stones, Skynyrd, just play a Southern rock, old school classic rock set with some local musicians. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not really into the kind of the idea to do the covers. It was so much fun to be up there. Jericho was there, a bunch of other local musicians, Artemis on drums. And I was just like, oh yeah. Like this, it was like, I don't know, like hang gliding or something the first time in your life. And you say, oh, this is my jam now. I gotta do this now. And that's the way I felt about this cover thing because, you know, I am, as I said earlier, I'm a 55-year-old man. I was in high school in the 80s. 80s music meant everything to me because that was my discovery. You know, that period of time when you're 12 years old until you're 18, that's prime.
Oh, yes.
Everything is music. Yeah. Unless you want to be a professional athlete, then baseball is your thing. But for me as a kid, I went to every concert. Maiden, Priest, Ozzy, Scorpions, Bon Jovi. I went to everything. I never missed a concert. It didn't matter what kind of style, what style it was. Went to Michael Jackson. I saw every Huey Lewis in the News. Bryan Adams. Like, I just loved music. I had a love affair. I was just one of those kids that just loved music. And even though I was a heavy metal kid growing up, MTV was the thing. I remember MTV started in 1981, and we didn't get cable until 82. But I remember every day I would come home from school and turn on MTV. And it was the most incredible thing, because it wasn't like it was like in the early 90s where things were kind of tribal. Yo, MTV Raps, Headbangers Ball. When you watched MTV in the early 80s, it was just everything. There wasn't like Alternative Nation. It was like Madonna.
Just one show.
Talking Heads, everything. And everybody loved everything. So I know all these songs. Like, and picking out the set list for the Guardians, and this is like one of the most fun things I'd ever done, was sitting down and going, okay, I got my gang of players. Let's start looking at songs. We start going through the Billboard charts. What were the big songs? What were the songs that were played the most on MTV? Looking at Spotify plays. What are the songs that people are still listening to now on Spotify? And getting all this kind of analytics to figure out. Because a lot of bands, too, they just play their favorite songs. Then you end up having like half a set full of deep cuts. Yeah. And the audience is like, yeah, I get it. You like that song. You know, go see most tribute bands or cover bands, and they're always playing the songs they like. Man, let's play, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But let's find the song that the band loves that they also play well. Because that's the thing about it, is that just because I love Smooth Criminal doesn't mean I should play Smooth Criminal. Because Michael Jackson has the narrowest of most specific thumbprints. The sound of his voice, the way that he articulates and his rhythm. When you look at the Guardian set list, there's some things you won't see. Prince, Michael Jackson, the Talking Heads. There are some very specific artists. I'm not saying we never will, but you must tread on those or undertake those songs and those artists with great reverence. Because it's not like you want to copy them. I can only play guitar like Rich Ward. I learned the notes. I learned what was done on the originals. And I play them the way I would. Because I am me. When I play Africa, I don't play it like Steve Lukather, because I can't. Because Steve Lukather is a way better guitar player at playing in Toto than I would be. Just like Steve Lukather wouldn't want to play in Stuck Mojo, because that wouldn't be his thing. So I try to figure out how do I intersect. These are like, we have crazy philosophical discussions about how do we as musicians intersect with these, and where are areas that we shouldn't veer too far away. And we don't want to make them ours. They already belong to the world. You don't want to reinvent a song like Summer of 69 or Like a Prayer by Madonna. Everybody knows those songs so intimately, they must not be tampered with. You must play them the way people remember them. And at the same time, we are who we are. So you color within the lines, but you use the color crayons that you feel are appropriate for you. So it's been an incredible education, learning how to play like these other artists. And also it's another fantastic thing. We all do it. I mean, look at you. Like, you went from being a drummer to one of the biggest podcasters, you know, YouTube.
Appreciate that.
And yet, so you think about it, it's like you're still playing drums. I still play in Fozzy, but you found new outlets for your creativity. And I think that's what truly creative people do. They're looking at new ways to challenge themselves, but things that interest them, things that they're good at. And I think, you know, you found podcasting, and I found, you know, playing Kenny Loggins songs. And it's and I think that's the goal for all of us, is as we get older, to keep us from accumulating moss, we have to keep moving and just figuring out new ways to challenge ourselves, and also new ways to feel alive. And that's we do Forever Young. We do both Alphaville and Rod Stewart. We yeah.
Combine them.
And that's, yeah. And it's my favorite moment of the set because it is such a reminder. Man, when I look at photographs of my dad when he was 55, he just looked like the oldest of the oldest man I could ever think of.
Same here. Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like, I think part of it is that there was this kind of understanding that if your choice in life was to, you know, you were going to raise a family, you were going to go to work, and there was a certain thing, and there was a kind of a mindset of what a family looked like and what a life looked like. And I think things have changed over the years, but I think it's also a personal choice. I mean, we can look at guys from and girls from 30, 40 years ago that they looked younger, but I think it was all about just living in the moment and waking up every day saying, I'm going to be doing things that make me happy and things that excite me and chase my dreams and never just think of myself as a cog, you know, in the meat grinder.
Yeah. And
I've created a life for myself that is exactly what I love. I wake up, I do 30 minutes of yoga, I play guitar, and the day is mine to be creative and write music. And if I'm on tour, then it's similar schedule minus the fact that I get to play every night. And sometimes that means there's, three or four months where we're all thinking, oh my God, how are we going to make it? Because this tour didn't sell as well as the other, or, you know, blame it on streaming or whatever you want to do, but the industry just contracts in certain ways. And you just have to say, it doesn't matter. Pure motives. Why are you doing this? Are you doing it because you want a nice car in the driveway and you want things? Or are you doing it because this is who you are? And luckily for me, my wife has allowed me to be irresponsible for the 21 years that she's been with me. And it allows me
21
to,
years. Yeah.
Yeah. I sleep in, and then she's never, it's time to get up. It's never any of that. It's that she knows that I'm one of Peter Pan's lost boys and I'm never going to grow up. And I'm always just going to, yeah. And I'm always going to be for better or worse, you know?
Hey, I got some things I was wanting to show you too. My son met you at Southern Honor Wrestling. Do you still go there? Look at this.
Of course. Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome. I see you every week. I see you every month at Southern Honor Wrestling because you're always on the screens. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Run the ads and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to meet Jake the Snake that night. So he's pretty happy about that. Do you still help out at the Running Sound and everything?
Yeah, I do. My job up there with Southern Honor and also my church, which is Action Church in Canton, my job there is basically the pastor Gary, who runs the wrestling and is the pastor Yeah. I mean, the coolest guy ever. He's allowed the church to be Fozzie and the Guardians and Stuck Mojo's home base. So when we rehearse, when we are organizing for tours and things, he allows us to use his building to basically call our home base. And then in exchange, whenever he needs something, he needs me to run sound at wrestling, he needs me to run sound at church, he needs anything, I'm there as his guy who can help out as someone who understands sound and has been around the show business for a lot of years. And he knows he can call me at any time and I'll be there in any way that I can help. And he's actually promoting concerts, and he's had, we've Stuck Mojo, Fozzie, and the Guardians have all played the Action Building, which is the church on Sunday, which is also
it's a church.
I know it's fantastic. So it's, you know, and as you know, because you know it as well as anybody, this business is just about relationships, and that's all it is.
Networking.
You find people that you love, you find people that you want to break bread with and you want to share your time with, and those are the people you stick with.
Yes, amen to that. And it, the longevity, and it can tell with your band now. I mean, you guys get along so well and just seems so, I don't know, man, it just seems great. And you can tell how long you've been doing this for, that it's just paying back now, you know? You're wiser. You've always been wise. You've always been the man.
I actually haven't been wise, but I've done so many terribly dumb things, but I'm glad that I have the scars to show them from.
I remember when you were telling me you were cutting grass one summer, you know, between Stuck Mojo
2005.
And Fozzy.
Yeah. Yeah. 2005.
Yeah. I got this too. What a crazy night this was.
The best night. I've got mine too. Yes.
I got to get you to autograph this, man. I got Morgan to sign it. But I had Morgan Rose in head. Yeah, what a crazy night that was, man. Talking about 80s.
I actually thought that was pretty amazing. I mean, I you know, obviously I don't know Head as well as you do. I've met him through you. Yeah. You know, but you know, I mean, I remember we played in the first time I ever heard of Korn. We were in Raleigh, North Carolina, and there was a band that was opening for Stuck Mojo in 1992 called Korn with the C. And they got, it was with a C. And the bass player in the band told me, yeah, we're going to have to change our name because there's another Korn in California. It's spelled with a K, but their attorney reached out to us and they have a trademark on it. And they were a killer band. We played with them a couple of times, but their thing was they would, you know, it was a little too on the nose, but they would throw popcorn in the crowd. And they were kind of, you know, that was the beginning of that alternative rock, alternative metal era. So everybody was starting to get funky. Everybody was loving the Chili Peppers. Everybody was loving Pantera. Any bands that grooved or had funk elements. That was the beautiful thing about the kind of early 90s. It was everybody was exploring those new elements, which is obviously where so much of that new metal came from, you know, which we were, you know, lucky to be a part of that wave as well with Stuck Mojo.
Were you ever into the grunge movement, like with the Nirvanas and you know, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains?
Very short. So in 92, I went to Lollapalooza and saw that incredible grunge lineup at Lollapalooza, which was Pearl Jam was second. Tool was first. Pearl Jam was second. And then I believe Ice Cube was next. And then it was Soundgarden. And then it was Ministry. It was like, yeah, I mean, I saw like the greatest bands of all time all there. And I love Pearl Jam's, that 10 album by Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
I think it's almost a perfect album. And obviously I love Bad Motor Finger. I thought Bad Motor Finger was probably my favorite grunge record of that era. I mean, it was perfect storm of guys who were doing grunge, but also there was some hard rock metal influences, enough Sabbath stuff in there that it was perfect. And it was produced by Terry Date, who was doing Pantera stuff. So it sounded incredible. So that was like, yeah, I love that stuff. I mean, I loved Alice in Chains. I mean, once it got a little of the alternative stuff, the alternative grunge stuff wasn't my favorite. I liked the stuff that was more kind of heavy guitar driven. I was a guitar player. I loved aggressive riffing. So those were the bands that I gravitated more towards. And I love Pearl Jam, even though they weren't necessarily a heavy band. I love them because their stage energy was just unparalleled. On that tour in particular, it was like the Chili Peppers. It was, you know, four out of the five band members were going absolutely crazy and losing their minds. And it was so much energy. And yeah, I mean, that was the beautiful thing about that era, was like everything was happening. You know, at the same time, you know, it was like hip hop was incredible in that early 90s. And it was just a great time to be alive musically, because it was almost at that period of time where you didn't have to be part of a scene. Like, you know, like in the 80s, who are you? What do you mean? Well, you had to fit into a category. And in the early mid 90s, it was just kind of open season to just do whatever, be expressive, do your thing. Because even though people would call Smashing Pumpkins grunge, it really wasn't. It was its own thing. And, you know, you didn't even know where to put Nine Inch Nails or Ministry. Like, you know, and then mid-90s, it was like, holy mackerel, you had Fear Factory and Machine Head and all of these exciting bands that were influenced by Pantera and Sepultura and were the evolution from that metal. It was just, it's fantastic. And then Devin Townsend with Strapping and Lad. And yeah, I mean, to be in the mix with all of that and playing shows with all of them, touring with those bands. I mean, Stuck Mojo toured with Type O Negative and Life of Agony and Pantera, Testament, 24/7 Spies. And we just, we were so lucky. And then Fozzy has done tours with Metallica and has done festivals with, I mean, we were the opening band on Motorhead's 30th anniversary show in Hollywood at the Wiltern Theater. We opened for Iron Maiden at a stadium in LA, like main support. We've just done.
You toured with Pantera. Don't forget that.
I know. Yeah. Toured with Pantera in Europe. I played a festival tour in Australia, and I stood next to James Hetfield watching Slayer play on side stage. It's like, I've just been like, I don't even know. Like every night we played with Pantera, I'd look on the side of the stage and there was Dimebag and Phil every night watching us. And
yes,
I've had an incredible life. And,
And I don't mean to cut you off, but you were sober for most of these days because you're not a big partier, so you actually remember these things. It's not like that blurry night, with the Pantera or whatever band.
I was sober for all of it. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was people always ask me, "You never partied?" I was like,
"Yeah."
Somebody had to drive the van, like it's that same little thing that you hear. It's like, when you're in a band full of people who are having a good time, somebody's got to get you to the next gig, you know, sober. And it kind of became my job, that I was the one to check us into the hotels. And I was that person. And it suited me because I was kind of a loner kid growing up. I didn't have an older brother or sister that was a partier who introduced me to that lifestyle. I didn't have any friends in the neighborhood who ever had parties that I came over to. No one was like showing me how to smoke weed at an early age or something. I just wasn't around it. So, you know, the kind of gateway to that lifestyle was not even around. I was in the Boy Scouts. I went to the skateboard park every Saturday. I played Dungeons and Dragons on Sundays at a hobby shop. Like, I was quintessential kind of nerd kid. I listened to my records by myself in my room. I didn't, you know, I played soccer. I played baseball until I got into junior high. And then everybody just grew fast and was better than me. Like, I love sports. It's just that I was never going to be good at it. I was too little. I was like Randy Rhodes or Jakey Lee or any other little, or Joe Perry. I was designed to be in a band. There was no room for me. And I was never going to be smart enough to be an engineer or a doctor. I was just an average kid who, you know, sometimes evolution and life just tells you what you need to do, right? It's like,
right.
I'm 5'9", 125 when I graduated high school. Music's my thing, right? I mean,
right.
I guess I'm lucky because I'm still doing what I love. And I saw your son. Tell him I said, hey.
Yeah, but he'll come back in a minute. Yeah, we'll have to wave to him. That's funny. Cool. Yeah, and you know, like, you're not stuck in a cubicle, which is pretty awesome. Because, you know, I couldn't imagine Rich Ward being in like an office job day to day, you know, 55, working 9 to 5. You got it made, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I could probably do it if I had done it my whole life, but it's kind of like taking an animal that's been wild its entire life and then putting it in your backyard in the cage. It's like, I've already lived too much of my life this way. It's in the same way that I think someone who has worked in a cubicle or has had structure could not operate in this way, because some people just need structure. They need, because that's the only thing they know. It's the same reason why when the wall fell in 88 and the Soviet Union basically freed all of these Soviet satellite states, people just didn't quite know what to do at first. Like people have been telling them what to do for so long. They'd been under such tight constraints of how to live their lives that it just.
Hey, buddy.
What's up? Yeah. So I just think it's, you know, part of it's just kind of, you know, nature versus nurture kind of thing. I've just been doing this so long that it would be very difficult to, you know, I mean, if I had to do it, I would. I've told people all the time, if the bottom fell out of this thing and I needed to make sure that there was food on the table, I'd do whatever it takes. I'm like, I don't think there's anything menial about what people can see, consider menial labor. It doesn't, you know, like all jobs are good. It just depends on, you know, what do I need and what's it going to take for me to get it? And I've been lucky that, I mean, during COVID, I mean, the thing that kept me alive was that I had a hit single in Judas and I kept getting those checks. It was like, it was the best thing I'd ever had. I'd never had a hit single, but it hit right before COVID. And when everything shut down and there was no touring and there was no money, I was so blessed. Tony Khan, the head of AEW, used that song as Jericho's entrance theme. And it kept that song alive because the average shelf life of a single, what, you know, if you're lucky, what, 4, 5, 6 months, something like that on radio. If you can get 8 or 9 months out of a single on radio, you're lucky. That song lasted for 4 years.
Oh, yeah. You're
because
so
it was on
that.
TV. Mm-hmm. I know it was on TV every Wednesday. And I've just been blessed that. And also, I never had expensive habits. You know, I've never been a drug guy. I've never been a fancy sports car guy. I've never been a expensive anything. I've kept myself pretty frugal because I know that you have to prepare for the famine, not the feast in this business. And so I've kind of set myself up for worst case scenario if the bottom falls out. And now I'm in a position where the Guardians are doing really well, not just success wise in growing audience, but financially things are really good. And you know, on one hand you can say we're selling out venues and packing buildings, but people are like, wow, it's incredible. I wouldn't want to show everyone the receipts of the 3 years that I invested everything that I was making into it, because just like your podcasting business, you don't launch any business from scratch without the first few years, or you just have to say, I'm going to invest in this. It's not going to bring any money in. I'm going to put what I believe in this thing. It doesn't matter if you're a race car driver or if you open an ice cream shop, your expenses are front loaded. You know, you spend the money, you put your heart and soul into it. And if you believe it's going to happen, then you make it happen.
Dude, I love the way you said that. I absolutely agree with that. I want to talk just real fast about Fozzy. Your last song that you put out was Spotlight, correct? Was that's the
yes?
That was a great song. And are you guys going to release another song? I like the slow drip of music that Fozzy's putting out.
Thank you. Yeah, that's kind of our new formula, and I think part of that just kind of comes down to Jericho is not a wrestling star. He's not a rock star. He's not a best-selling author. He's now a movie star. Like, he's in big films. And his schedule is such that he's like the Terminator. Like, he just doesn't sleep. And the minute that he gets off his cruise, Chris Jericho, it doesn't say the Fozzy cruise or the AEW cruise. It's the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager, or Rocking Wrestling Rager. I mean, dude, he has his own cruise and it's sold out. And then he gets off the boat and immediately goes to LA and then is immediately back for wrestling. It's like we have 2 days off a week when Fozzy's touring. It's always Tuesday and Wednesday. So he flies out after the show on Tuesday. So depending on where we are, he'll fly out after the show, private. He'll get on a private plane, fly home so that he can spend all day Tuesday with his family because he realizes this time is so important. His kids are young and having a day at home is important. He wants to take his kids to school, pick them up, have some normalcy. Even if it's just one day a week, he's with his kids and his wife. Then on Wednesday, he's got to fly out and wrestle. And then he gets up the next morning and flies out and meets us wherever we are on tour to play that night on tour. And then stays with us for 5 days and repeats. And then he's doing podcast. He does podcasts in the back lounge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's constantly working. And what he does is he tries to figure out what town am I in? Who lives in this town? So if we're in, you know, if we're in New Jersey, he'll call up Bubba Ray Dudley and say, hey, while I'm in town at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, can I interview you for my podcast? He gets his friends in wherever city he's in. And he's always working. And part of that also means it's harder to get together and write records. It's harder to get together and could we do it? Of course. But we're at the point where everything we do has to be a home run. There's no stand-up doubles allowed 25 years into Fozzy's career. I don't want to put out B-sides or okay. So I think we've got this idea that doing what Spotlight did, we wrote a fantastic song. It's one of my favorite songs we've done.
Wow.
And yeah, and we're just, that's the idea. And I'm constantly presenting songs to Chris and to our producer, Johnny. What do you think of this? And then try not to cry a river when they say, I love that. What else you got? And that's our process. It's just, you know, working like that and trying to figure out how we can best the last song, whatever that means. You know, like, I think we have personal metrics that we say whether a song is a success or not. But I generally, that means, you know, we've got a bunch of songs that have been top 10. So I think we want to write songs that get in the top 10 on the charts, but also songs that we feel are true representations of who Fozzy is in 2024. And songs that we can all be proud of, songs that feel like Rich Ward on guitar and Billy Gray on lead guitar and, you know, Chris Jericho and lead vocals, not trying to be whatever's going on hip, because we'll never be able to keep up with the Joneses. You just can be the best version of you. And so it's been great. We would always love to tour more. But I can't tell my partner, don't go be a movie star, you know, don't go be the biggest name in professional wrestling, minus maybe The Rock.
That's true. Like, yeah.
You know, this is built in. It's like baked into the cake. My relationship with him is that Fozzy is one of the things he does, which is why the Guardians have been so important to myself and Grant. Is that the more success that Jericho has and the more things that he has obligations to do business-wise, it allows Grant and I to have something to fulfill our purpose with so that we're not just sitting on the sidelines, you know, practicing at home or waiting for the next thing or whatever. Fozzy provides a good life for Grant and myself, but we still want to play, you know, there's still life left in the tires. We want to be on the track and, you know, and until, you know, I know that Rush, when they said it was time, it's because two of the members in the band said it was time. It wasn't one guy. Cause Neil Peart goes to the guys and says it's time. And Alex Lifeson says one more tour, you know, and of course Geddy sitting on the sidelines saying, I never want to stop. But when you're a band, you have to figure out when that time is for the band, and then you figure out what time it is for you as individuals to wrap it up. And I still feel fantastic. You know, I have all those things that every, you know, person over 50 who plays an instrument deals with. I've got low back pain. I've got some arthritis in their hands. The same thing at George Lynch and Corey Taylor and everybody else who's ever done this, Phil Anselmo. We all do that because none of us are going to go out there and stand there and stare at our shoes. This is every day is the Super Bowl. Every show is the Super Bowl. And we're all so lucky to do it that we would never punish the fans who are there that night by phoning it in. They deserve 100% of everything that we have. So you suck it up. You take four Advil, you drink some green tea, and you go out there and you pretend like there's nothing going on. And when the show's over, you put some ice on your back and you know, and the main thing is that my focus has been no OxyContin, no painkillers. I've never taken them and I won't, because I see what's happened to other musicians who have had back pain, other athletes who have had back pain, and they start chasing that dragon. For me, it's the thing that saved my life has been that DDP yoga, which I do every day. Yeah. I'm very light. I don't lift weights anymore. I weigh 145 pounds. I used to weigh 205 when I was in Stuck Mojo. I was muscular, and I realized that my frame can't sustain that kind of weight. And so I eat lean. I train every day, and I don't do it because for vanity reasons, although I lifted weights in the 90s for vanity reasons, because I wanted to be jacked like all my heroes. I wanted to look like Henry Rollins. You know, I wanted to look like Glenn Danzig. These dudes, when I saw them on stage, it was like, oh, they looked as powerful as their music sounded. And I always thought that was incredible. You know, when we toured with Typo Negative, and Pete Steele would roll up the back of the truck and get in there and pump iron every day. I wanted to be just like Pete Steele, because I realized he looked the way he sounded. It reinforced the power of the music. Now, if I was in Dream Theater, it doesn't need to be that, because Dream Theater is beautiful. It's a different approach, but Stuck Mojo was a jackhammer, and it was something that was just rhythmically punishing you, and I wanted to look that part, which is why I trained the way that I did. And luckily for me, Jericho is always going to be the biggest guy in Fozzy, so I don't need to compete with him. I could be his skinny little partner. He could be the skipper, and I could be Gilligan, and we can have a great relationship. I'm lucky. I've been very lucky in my career. Bones was one of the best frontmen in all of of crossover, new metal, whatever you want to call it. He was by far one of the best. And part of the reason was just because it was real. Like he was never trying to pretend to be anything. He was just that guy. And the crazy thing about it is I never really understood it when I was younger. I was constantly worried about all the chaos that was created by that energy, not realizing that if you took it away, all the magic that was Bones would have gone away too. In the same way that nobody wants to see a Boy Scout with a perfectly intact family and went to private school, they don't want to see them be the front man of a heavy metal band, because they don't have any, there's no pain and struggle and stories to tell.
Bad News Bears, broken, man. That just made me think of that.
Broken people make for great artists. And I don't wish that upon anybody. My dad was never around. I never thought it was abnormal, because it was my life. My stepbrother and I had bunk beds in my room. We didn't have air conditioning when I was growing up. We would just crack the windows and put a fan in the window. It just seemed normal to me. Like if you're a kid, you don't think you're poor because you share a room with your stepbrother. I watched the Brady Bunch. They didn't seem poor. And there was a crap ton of kids living in a couple of rooms in their house. And I just thought it was normal. But if you grow up comfortable and wealthy, and then all of a sudden you have to sleep on the floor of somebody you met that night at the venue because you don't have enough, your band doesn't have enough money to pay for a hotel, life sucks. Like, you know, if you grew up in Canada in the winters, and then all of a sudden you come down to Atlanta and during the winter you don't have a jacket, doesn't bother you. I felt worse. I know what cold weather feels like. And I think part of the reason why a lot of musicians who succeed in this business why this business is populated by broken people is just because the business is tough, but these people have already experienced tough. They've had tough lives. They've dealt with abuse and worse. I didn't deal with abuse, but I did live what I now would, if you looked at it, through the prism of today, I lived in a fairly lower middle class household. But I didn't think of it at the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Absolutely.
I had friends that were rich, but I just thought they were rich. I didn't think that that meant that I was poor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I think that's a good thing. That people who grow up with stories to tell and not ideal childhoods, they make for interesting artists, and it doesn't matter who it is. Look at all of them. They're all a little broken, or the clocks don't exactly run on time. And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm a proud part of that community. I'm glad music was there for me. It saved my life. You know, discovering Judas Priest when I was 12 years old saved my life. It gave me something to focus on and something to listen to and things to take my mind off of, you know, not feeling like I fit in, not feeling like I had a, you know, I was never going to click with the in crowd. And it gave me my own click. I found other people who liked Judas Priest. And then, you know, it made me through that little shelter of, you know, people who loved heavy metal was kind of my identity.
You guys did that for us too. Stuck Mojo did that. I mean, I still have a group of friends that we all went and saw Stuck Mojo in Atlanta. We're all super young. We're still friends today. So we had a community awesome. Like that. Creative Loafing, like, when are they going to play next? Before internet, you know? Yeah. I love
that.
That
was
last
magic
thing.
Time, man. That was magic it was, time.
It was, man. I love it. Last thing I'll say, and then we can move on, or we can end this. But your sound guy, Sam Abernathy, he's the man. How did you find Sam? He's been with you for a while.
Yeah, Sam was the house sound man at the 120 Tavern in Marietta, and Fozzie played a show there, and I had met Sam before then. Because he was in a band called Uber Stout. He was a local guitar player, and Sam is an incredible guitar
Great.
Player. And I met him, basically kind of became aware of him through him being the house sound man at this venue that Fozzie played in. And then we had several sound men that we had over the years, and Fozzie was looking for a sound guy. And this would have been probably 17 or 18, 2017, 2018, something like that. A friend of mine said, do you know Sam Abernathy? He was the house sound guy at 120 Tavern. He's a big Rich Ward fan. He used to go see Mojo play all the time at the Masquerade. And I think you guys would get along really good because you have similar interests and you're, you know, both kind of came up in the Atlanta music scene, different generation, but, same kind of dudes. And, we became great friends and now we're best friends, and he's part of everything I do. You know, I don't get on a cruise ship or an airplane or go to Australia or Europe or LA or whatever without it. You know, and Sam's the same as me. He's broken just like me. We're good partners. You know, we do this because this is what we're supposed to do. And whatever it takes, that's what we're going to do. And Sam is a fantastic guitar player. He's a great engineer. He'll probably find himself making records with other bands down the road. His future is limitless. It's only based on whatever he decides to do because he's very talented. And when we're on tour with Fozzie, he's the best guitar player in the band. And he's running sound. He's amazing.
And he plays every Monday, I think, at Dixie Tavern, or he's playing there all the time now. I see him.
Yeah. You know, he's got his own jam night at Dixie Tavern.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I've had him on the show. And he's a bigger Mojo fan than I am. I mean, he's like, I thought I knew Mojo, and he's like correcting me on lyrics and dates. I'm like, you are the number one fan, dude.
He's great, Rich, man. Yeah, he was at the shows too. He was like, "Oh, I was at that show. I was at this show. I was at that show." Yeah.
Was he? Yeah, he was there. He was. I think he was there during the Rising video when you guys were shooting that. You know, I wanted to
he
be
was.
There. But yeah.
He was there great. At the Heavy One album recording, the live album.
I was there. Show. Yeah, I was there too.
Yes, nice.
Yeah, I remember that night. That was a great night. Oh my gosh, that live album. It means the world. I actually bought that recently. It was on sale. I bought the vinyl. It was cool to have, you know.
Yeah, Century Media licensed it. I've got a few copies of it. I haven't started promoting it yet because I was like, I always feel weird when my social media accounts all feel like I'm selling something. Like, come see Fozzy on the Jericho boat. Oh, by the way, come see Guardians. We're playing here. Oh, by the way, Stuck Mojo. I've got a new album out. So, anytime I feel like I'm being spammed to death, it reminds me, don't do it yourself. But now that the Fozzy stuff has simmered down a little bit, I'm gonna advertise about it. But it's a company that Century Media licensed. And I think it may be multiple albums. We may actually go back and do, yeah.
Oh, it'll be really cool. That's so great. I don't have any space. I have no space on my walls, but I'll find space to frame it. I may have to take some stuff down. And you know.
What vinyl are you missing from Stuck Mojo?
So I definitely have the first one. I have Pigwalk. I think I got them all. Yeah. Now that you say that. Oh. The last Stuck Mojo album. No, the last one with Bones. I don't think I have that on vinyl. I can't think of the album name.
Declaration of a Headhunter?
Yes, yeah, that's the one I don't have.
I don't have that one either. That's the one I don't have either. So I'll try to find this too. Or I'll try to talk him into reissuing it. Yeah.
That would be rad.
Because I don't have a copy. Yeah. That's the only one I don't have. I've signed some copies of it, but I've never owned one. I should have been like, mine?
mine. Well, Rich, man, thank you so much for being on my podcast. This means a lot to me, you know. You're
a
great person. I love talking to you. You're motivating. Like, I want to do things. No, thank you so much. That means the world. And I appreciate it, man. I'm looking forward.
Yeah, next time we'll sit down together. I'll bring my bump box remix. Where's my finger? Yeah.
Yes.
And bring mine and we'll set them next to each other and have a remix bump box wars.
Dude, that'd be awesome, man. Yeah, my neighbors will love it. The whole neighborhood will hear it. Yeah.
Nice. I love you. I love you, Scott. Have a wonderful night, man. It's great talking with you.
I love you too, brother. Thank you so much for doing this, man. It means the world.
Yeah, my privilege, brother.